Technorama episode 360 for November 14, 2012. Full circle.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
360 as in degrees? Because I've been all over this place and I keep ending up right back.
Over there, in the media corner.
Yeah, there.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for November 14th, 2012. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. If you're a new listener, for the first time ever, thank you for joining us. We appreciate giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Hold on a second. I'm trying to down this wine before you ask me that question.
Wine? Oh, very posh. We've upscaled our podcast.
Yes, today I am drinking a nice German Liefermilch.
Amazing. He said a German word. mostly correct, too.
I can say Sauerbraten. Actually, I like Liefermilch. You like Liefermilch? You like German wines?
Yes.
They're very good.
Now, let's see how well he does with Gewürztraminer. Gotta go back and listen to old episodes of Tim Elliott's Winecast.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
We're not here to talk about beer or wine. We're here to talk about fun, geeky stuff. Yeesh. Aren't you?
Yes, I am. Or, yes. Or were you talking to listener or me?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, I am. Come
so
in.
We have coming up in this episode, are itches the same in space? You've heard of pirate radio. Now there's zombie radio, and new research shows Facebook IPO can be hazardous to your financial health. One of those is true. None of it is coming up right after this.
Things that make you go, hmm.
We're at the coffee table and somebody's drinking tea.
Love the tea. Gotta stay warm.
Yeah. Let's do something funny for Chuck. Craig, let's figure out how to blow the coffee pot up.
With laser beams?
Yeah.
Let's use laser beams to make instant tea. That would be cool. And then let's put it on YouTube and send it to Technorama. Oh. They're out of water. The laser has zapped all the water out.
Hey, this is Alan Ruck, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig. And they're no damn good.
Every week we want to remind you that we do the show live, because every week we do remind you that we do the show live on Google Plus Hangouts. You can join us there at 9:30 Eastern Time. We'd love to see you there. Join us in the chat room. You're going to go to chuckchat.com/webcam. Actually, you know what? I think you play our previous episode on there if you don't make it in time, right?
Actually, yeah, this episode that we're recording now will always be there until next week.
Like yesterday's old bread.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, the funny thing about it, ironically, we do this live, so you can listen to it later.
Right. But join us live, because Craig does some editing, and there's stuff between these segments that, yeah, you don't want to miss that.
No.
And we have a live chat room. In the chat room this week, we have some of the regulars, Tim Elliott, Mad Marv, Steve Rickyberg, you and me, and ZML2008, whom I think is just a chat bot at this point. The robots
reduced.
Have taken over and assimilated him.
Reduced or enhanced?
Reduced.
Yeah.
We'll get into some of that later.
Hey, it looks like we coordinated on the video today.
But my caption says I'm Red Leader, so.
No, I mean your shirts. Your shirt.
I'm wearing a hoodie, man. I don't know about you.
I'm actually wearing my Flash shirt.
Hoodies are cool. I'll get my sunglasses and I'll look like the Unabomber.
Yeah.
The Unix Bomber.
The Unix Bomber. I'm surprised I hadn't heard that one before. Maybe I
just
have.
Made it up.
Maybe
Ding,
I have.
Go register it. Anyway, We have a birthday calendar. July. Whoa. Holy smokes. November. I don't want this year to be over yet.
No, no kidding. You're going backwards.
We only have one on the calendar this week. November 15th is Chuck Jolly, a.k.a. Nightstar. We have not heard from Nightstar in quite some time.
Hope so he's still having birthdays.
I think he is.
Okay.
We have a birthday calendar, so he must be getting birthdays still.
I see.
We would like to see more birthdays on the calendar for this week of November 14th through 20th. And then when we come around to it next year, it'll be, I don't know, this was a leap year, so don't make me do the math, but in this time range of year, put your name down and we wish you all the happiest of birthdays at that time. And we'll give you a shout out if your name's on the birthday calendar.
Hey, how's by that? The way, I don't know if it's the same Chuck Jolly, but the one I found on Twitter is the president of MIHOF. The meat industry president of Jolly, Otter, Emma.
No, that makes total sense.
I don't know what MIHOF
is. You said meat industry, right? As in beef?
Yes.
So he'd be the Jolly Rancher. Sorry, I didn't have that ready. Can I give myself a delayed rim shot?
Oh, boy.
You set that up beautifully, my friend. Huge congratulations to longtime listener and fellow podcaster Claudio Miranda. That's why he's not in the chat room, because he's probably in the honeymoon suite. He has been married this last weekend.
Look, if he was a loyal listener,
he'd introduce his wife. Tell a friend, not your spouse. How's that?
Yeah. I was thinking if he was a loyal listener, he'd be listening on his honeymoon. Hold on, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll be out in 50 minutes. I'm just in the bathroom. Yeah. What are you doing
don't
in
go
there?
Long. Nothing. Don't go long. Hey, he's telling us, don't go long. Come on.
All right, then we'll make the show short just for you, Claudio and Mrs. Claudio.
Mrs. Claudio.
Sandra. Her name is now Sandra Miranda. That's awesome. That's like Kevin Devon. Craig is going to lose it tonight. On this day in history for November 14th, 2012. It was on this date in 1889 that pioneering female journalist Nellie Bly, a.k.a. Elizabeth Cochran, begins a successful attempt to travel around the world in less than 80 days. She completes a trip in 72.
And aviator Eugene Ely performs the first takeoff from the ship in the Hampton Roads, Virginia. He took off from a makeshift deck on the USS Birmingham in 1910.
90 years ago today, the BBC begins radio service in the United Kingdom.
And November 14th, 1952, the first regular UK singles chart publishes the new Music Express.
American physicist Theodore Maiman is given a patent for his Ruby Laser Systems, the world's first laser, 45 years ago today.
And it was also on November 11th, 1969, that NASA launches the Apollo 12, the second crewed mission to surface the moon.
Mariner 9 enters orbit around Mars today in 1971.
And 21 years ago in Red Oak, Michigan,
Royal Oak, Michigan, man, that's where I was born. Get the name right.
I'm sorry, I'm still trying to recover from that laughing. 21 years ago in Royal Oak, Michigan, a fired United States Postal Service employee goes on a shooting rampage, killing 4 and wounding 5 before committing suicide, giving us the morbid phrase of being stressed out as going postal.
Or listening to Technorama. And on November 11th, 2003, astronomers Michael E. Brown, Chad Trujillo, and David L. Rabinowitz, no relation to Samuel L. Bronkowitz, discovered 90377 Sedna, a trans-Neptunian object. That almost looks like you should spell something in leet speak.
Yeah. Turn upside down. Look at it backwards.
Right. Happy birthday goes out on this day to Leopold Mozart, Austrian composer, Wolfgang Mozart's father, born today in 1719.
And sharing his birthday is Mozart's father, who you just mentioned, is Ludwig von Beethoven's father, who we just mentioned again, Johann Beethoven.
Born exactly 21 years after that in 1740. Wow. Same birthday for their dads.
I'm still recovering.
Also born on this date in 1765, American inventor Robert Fulton. Quick, what did he invent?
I don't know.
Steamboat.
Oh, yeah.
You lose.
That's right. I do remember that now. Where am I at?
Yours.
Made me lose my place. And another inventor was born today in 1863. Leo Hendrik Baekeland, a Flemish American chemist and inventor of the first synthetic plastic.
Bakelite! That brown brittle stuff that they use for old radios and things. First Lady of the United States, Mamie Eisenhower, was born today in 1896. I guess there were no ladies before her.
That's right. And TV producer who brought us such shows as Gilligan's Island and The Brady Bunch was born today in 1916. Happy birthday goes out to Sherwood Schwartz.
Not Sherwood Forest. May the Schwartz be with you. American astronaut Edward Higgins White was born today in 1930.
And another American astronaut aboard of Fred Heiss. I'm sorry, I'm trying to recover here.
Oops, and I didn't write this one very well either. There, read that one again.
All right. And another American astronaut, Fred Heiss, who flew aboard...
Fred Hayes, like the modem.
Fred Hayes, I knew that. Hold on.
Didn't you watch Apollo 13, man?
Hold on a second. And another American astronaut, Fred Hayes, who flew aboard the Apollo 13, turned 79 today.
And finally, the man who brought us Norton Utilities and that lovely pink shirt back in the 80s and 90s, American software engineer Peter Norton, is 69. And that's the way it was on this day in history for November 14th, 2012.
Hey, Chuck, you can do the Peter Norton pose. Remember?
Right, with the sleeves rolled up. Absolutely. Here, yeah. Push
did he have a pink shirt?
Yes, he did. You don't remember that?
I don't remember the pink shirt, but I always remember him like this.
It was pink first, then it was white.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember the white shirt. And he was always... Okay,
it kind of reminds me of David Allen in some respects.
Yeah.
You know what? I thought it would be fun to have, since we have the birthday calendar, we could also have the Geek Zodiac. So, sure. Ninjas, be alert. Your upcoming attack may not go as planned. Use stealth to your advantage. Pirates, booty is on the horizon. Keep after it. Robots... distractions abound. Stay focused on your plan. Strike when they least suspect.
Disobey the
superheroes. Love is in the air, but you must not let it show. It could be your downfall. Keep it secret. Keep your secret safe and revel in it.
I thought
zombies,
I said reveal it.
Brains.
I thought I said reveal it, not revel in it.
That's your Geek Zodiac for November 14th, 2012. We might bring you more of those later. If you like it, let us know. Send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com, or call the listener line 206-222-2428. Maybe you can make up something funnier. We dare you.
Yeah, I dare you.
Uh-oh. That soundbite doesn't exist, so the app left me.
Man, you made me laugh earlier, and it threw me all off.
Yeah, must have been a good one.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and listen to what I said. Try it again sometime.
Impending news, everyone!
Impending news. We have lots of interesting news this week. There's been a new dinosaur found, well, at least part of a dinosaur, and named after the big bad guy on Lord of the Rings, Sauron. Earlier this year, a team of paleontologists... Okay, here's your chance to get back at me for hard-to-pronounce words. Let's see how I do. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Earlier this year, a team of paleontologists came into the possession of what appeared to be a 95-million-year-old skull cap from a previously unknown dinosaur. Further analysis showed that the bone likely belonged to Carcharodontosaurid, an offshoot of the familiar Allosaurus. Given its unique domed skull, the researchers concluded that it was in fact a newly discovered species, one they decided to name after the demonic Sauron in the Lord of the Rings series.
So they brought they're bringing him back.
What? Right.
What kind of sense does this make?
We got the skull. Let's get the eye.
Yeah.
Its full name is Sauraniops. That is a dumb name. Hmm. Oh, Sauraniops Pachytholus. Okay, that's a little better.
Yeah.
Yoo-hoo, Sauraniops. A massive bipedal Carcharodontosaur. That's just... hard to say. I always think Carcharodon. No. What's the shark? There's a massive shark.
The
I'll get it in a minute anyway. That lived during the Cretaceous period. The paleontologists Andrew Cow, Fabio Dalla Vecchia, these are harder than the dinosaur names, and Matteo Fabri
Maybe it's a prerequisite
that the single fragment provided enough evidence to warrant the classification of an entirely new species, and their work described the new dinosaur has been published in Acta Paleontologica Polonia.
Well, even that's hard to pronounce. How do you find it?
Oh, I'm sorry, not Polonia. It's Polonica.
Wow, even the new magazine's dinosaur. Hard to find.
I think he needs a YouTube video and a song to go with this.
A YouTube video.
Sure, all good bad guys, dinosaurs do. The only thing worse than bad dinosaurs and Sauron are lawyers, and they've just had to ruin everything. No longer are we allowed to call those miniature people discovered in, was it Borneo? The hobbits.
Oh yeah, the hobbits.
Homo florentiensis. Let me see if I get this one. This is the day of hard scientific names. What do I do these stories for?
Yeah.
Floresiensis.
Didn't you proof these earlier?
F-L-O-R-E-S. Floresiensis. Yes, we'll go with that. Likely stood about 3 feet, 6 inches, or just over 1 meter, making this prehistoric human roughly the average height of one of J.R.R. Tolkien's hobbits. 4 years, Floris Man, didn't he deliver flowers? Has been referred to by the nickname Hobbit, contributing to the species' popularity. But one company that owns the film rights to The Hobbit, here comes, has decided that the archaeologist who discovered Homo florentiensis, okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Can I refer to the ancient human by that name? The Guardian reports that Dr. Brent Alloway, associate professor at Victoria University, is planning a free lecture on Homo florentiensis by Michael Morwood and Thomas Sutikna, two of the archaeologists who discovered the species. But when Alloway approached the Sol Zenza Company / Middle Earth Enterprises, which owns the rights to the film, for permission to the title of the lecture, The Other Hobbit, mm-hmm. The lawyer responded, "It is not possible for our client to allow generic use of the trademark Hobbit, the Tolkien estate, which owns the registered trademarks on the word Hobbit in several companies, was not approached."
Well, come on.
Hey, you got to protect your trademarks. You know, we're not going to call this new Wait. Didn't they just call a dinosaur Sauron?
Yeah. Well, what's the difference? Yeah. That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe the lawyers haven't gotten after them yet. It's a new story. Hmm. But this Hobbit character has been discovered a few years ago.
Hey, let's name the next one iPod and see what happens.
No, Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse.
Or Darth Vader. Goofy. Come on. Now you only get sued by one company.
Yeah. Consolidation.
Yeah. Although they probably combine their lawyers for double the strike force.
We found the eye dinosaur. Oh, look, the phone's ringing. It's Apple. No.
Here's something cool that I want to do. I want to go to Tokyo and use the first 3D printing photo booth.
This sounds cool.
Me into an action figure. Can you imagine if we did our Men in Black thing and then went to this 3D photo booth?
And made little action figures of ourselves?
Yeah, with the pose and everything.
That would be cool. The pose we practiced on?
Right. The advent of the photo booth gave ordinary people access to inexpensive photo portraits. We all know that from long gone history and movies and things. The 3D printing photo booth might do the same thing with personal action figures. A pop-up shop opened this month in Tokyo's Harajuku neighborhood will let folks print out 3D dolls of themselves. Omochi 3D Shashinkan. Yikes. I'll work on that.
Yeah.
Will open on November 24th in the Eye of Gyre exhibition space in Harajuku and run until January 14th, 2013. So run for about 6 weeks. A technician at the lab will scan your body, much like with early photography, you'll need to be able to hold a certain pose for 15 minutes.
Whoa.
Oh, we're going to get sore posing like Men in Black for 15 minutes.
I can do it. Can you?
Yeah, sure.
I can do it. No sweat.
Hold my chest out like that.
Yeah, and kind of do it.
It'll print out an impressively realistic 3D photo and capture not only your features, but also the basic textures of your clothing and hair. The process isn't cheap. Here we go.
Yeah,
for a single individual, a 10-centimeter figurine will run you 21,000 yen, or about $264. Hey,
when you start talking in yen and pesos, it sounds like it's so much more expensive.
Well, $264 ain't cheap.
No, but 2,000 whatever you said.
That's not, pesos are a lot more reasonable than when they were than when I was married, because it was used to be like thousands of pesos to the dollar. Then they devalued it by about 1,000%.
You know, when I saw this picture earlier, let me share this so you can see.
I think this would be cool.
You know, when I saw this picture earlier, I thought it was one of those fake, you know,
wedding perspective kind of pictures.
It was one of those forced perspective kind of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like there was a story about the dog dressed up as Bantha, and they put a little Sandman guy on top of him.
Yeah.
And they gave it this perspective, so it looked like this little pug was a full-size Bantha. I think this would be fun. I do.
This would be good for wedding toppers.
Put this on top of our 25th wedding anniversary cake.
I know. I was going to say, there you go. There's your cake, right? There's your cake topper.
They go, wow, how'd you get those models that look just like you?
It is us.
In Star Wars getup.
Yeah, look closer. Yeah. Hey, I want one where I can make it look like the old Luke Skywalker action figure where the lightsaber kind of came out of his hand. It retracted into his forearm.
Cool.
Remember those?
Yes, I do.
That'd be kind of fun.
And speaking more of space, since that's kind of where we were, I saw this. I think this is cool. I always wanted to know when the space station was going overhead, but I can never remember to check the website.
Yeah.
So now you can get text or email when the space station will be in your neighborhood. Well, overhead in your area.
Yeah.
NASA writes, did you know you can see the ISS from your house? As the third brightest object in the sky after the sun and moon, the space station is easy to see if you know where and when to look. And now it turns out that there's a service that will help you do just that. It's called Spot the Station. Sounds like what you tell your dog.
Smart.
And it's provided free by NASA. Simply head over here, which here is NASA space station, excuse me, spotthestation.nasa.gov, and there's an index.cfm. Cold fusion. Oh,
I know. I said the same thing. I was like, what? Come on, NASA.
Letdown. That's index.cfm. It's provided free.
Well, here's the only problem, and I hope this is not an issue, but I did sign up for it.
Yes.
It asked me what city. So when I put it in the state or country region, when it got down to state, it didn't have my city.
Well, no, they only have the major cities. And when I selected Appleton, the darn thing crashed. It's like, it didn't know. I said, okay, let's try Green Bay. So it seems like it's kind of 1.0 at this point. There might be some bugs to work out.
Well, I did put in Charlotte, North Carolina. I figured that was close enough.
I don't know. If something's 30 miles off in the sky.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I'm just taking a guess there. But
east? I don't know.
I didn't have much choice, so.
Well, Charlotte's close to you. That's 30 miles, what, north?
Yeah, about 28 miles. And so, yeah, I figured if it's going to be in my area, I'd send a text. I'd get a text, so I'd know to look anyway. So we'll see. I signed up for the email, actually, instead of the text.
I think I'm going to go for the text if they can ever figure out how to not crash in Wisconsin. That's not a good sign, the ISS crashing.
No, especially trying to just send you a text. I mean, all the other things they do currently.
In the Hex and Stray Stories, we have one of the world's favorite calculator companies, Texas Instruments, with their TI-84. It makes quick work of graphs and equations like nobody's business, but it's done so for years while clinging to an outdated black and white screen.
Yeah.
That's kind of true. I never really thought about it. A lot of calculators still have the old style LCD. Now, however, it looks as though that'll change. For at least one flavor of the souped-up digital abacus.
Digital abacus.
Sematech forum user Orac343 posted a photo of the TI-84 Plus C Silver Edition, claiming that it was one of the 24 provided by TI in classroom testing, and that it's slated to launch next spring. Ooh, Julie's going to have to get a new calculator.
Why don't you just download the app?
That's actually, don't,
they
point.
Do have some high-end calculator app apps for all the little functions, don't they?
Pretty sure.
Yeah, I haven't really investigated, but I remember seeing one that had some scientific stuff on it. So Yeah, it just seems a little outdated to me, but at this point, I don't know, is I'm asking.
With the help of the refreshed TI-84, we might finally be able to tell if Blinky, Inky, Pinky, and Clyde is the ghost chasing, which of them are chasing us down in the Hardware's Pac-Man clone.
Hmm. I mean, are they not obsolete yet? I mean,
what, calculators? No, absolutely not. Wait till Harrison gets to high school, dude. They still make you buy specific calculators for specific math classes.
No, I mean, but you know, you see where I'm coming from, though. Everybody's, not everybody, but they, I mean, even...
It's about time. I'd rather pay $10 to download a TI, you know, whatever app than buy the actual hardware.
It seems to me that they did have an app like that. But I mean, even if you bought your kid an iPod Touch and installed an app, you know, that can do other things as well, of course, but...
I agree. But then again, why aren't all your students' textbooks on a tablet yet?
Well, you know, that is common. Actually, you know, here in Rock Hill, I'm sure in other places too, some places they're starting to require kids to have iPads.
I've been all for that since they first came out a couple half years ago.
Well, I'm half and half. I wish they wouldn't require a particular brand, you know, like an iPad. Get a tablet, you know.
If they require a specific book in a chemistry class or math class or something like that. They require a specific calculator in these classes. Mm-hmm. You got to standardize somewhere.
Yeah, maybe, but it just seems like, you know, buy this particular product. Well, I guess it's always been like that.
When
right?
hasn't that been the case?
Yeah, I know. Fine. Because maybe I want to buy my kid an Android tablet.
You rebels in your open standards, get with the times.
I try, man.
All right. Speaking of trying, here's a story that has our attention. Anytime you read the headlines, a urine power generator, I say that goes in the Technorama show.
It catches my eye. Yes.
That's right. Both of us tagged this one this week. Possibly one of the more unexpected products at the Maker Faire Africa. This year in Lagos is a European.
You said European.
European. I'm going to go get more beer. Is a urine power generator created by four girls. The girls are Duro Aina Adebola, age 14, Akindele Abiola, age 14, Falaki Oluwatoyin. I really hope. And there's one more. Bello Eniola, 15. So three 14-year-olds and a 15-year-old takes 1 liter of urine and gives you 6 hours of electricity. The people in New York could use this because the subways smell like they've been used for that anyway.
They just should put urine collectors in the subways.
Right, and then they can power the generators. The system works like this. Urine is put into an electrolytic cell, which separates out the hydrogen. Then the hydrogen goes into the water filter for purification, which then gets pushed into the gas cylinder. The gas cylinder pushes hydrogen into a cylinder of liquid borax, which is used to remove the moisture from the hydrogen gas. Mm-hmm. And then this purified hydrogen gas is pushed into the generator. Along the whole way, there are one-way valves for security, but let's be honest, that's...
Who's going to steal it?
That this is something of an explosive device. Oh, yeah, hydrogen gas. I wonder what it costs to build this.
I don't know. It can't be too much. I mean, peas for free.
Yep. Got to have the Briggs & Stratton motor.
Yeah. And it looks like a tank. Well, I don't know. It can't be. Actually, I thought it was. It seemed pretty economical. That's pretty cool, though.
Good picture, yeah.
Way to use your
smart
noggin.
Girls, I'd love to see this take off.
Yeah, way to use your noggin, actually. That's pretty good.
That's awesome. Hey, we are going to take a real quick break.
Hey, wait a minute, by the way.
Yes?
It looks like all those girls won the Masters because they all got green jackets on.
Maybe they did. That's how they funded it.
They got some sponsors now.
Real quick break. We'll be back with the Remember When segment when we find one of our favoritest, oldest toys, accessories, what do you want to call it? And one of our most noted scientists is appearing in one of our most noted comic books right after this.
He can compile C with his bare hands. He speaks the binary language of moisture evaporators in 3 dialects. He invented binary. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friends.
That's not the right music for Remember When, so we'll just live with it and go with it.
Yeah, just go with it.
3, 2, 1. Okay, this is even older than that. This is about 2,000 years older than that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Romans may have actually used the 20-sided die almost 2 millennia before D&D. Back when it stood for destroy and dominate.
Yeah, it's got letters on it like E and B and...
I think it had... Yeah, those were...
H.
So they got some kind of runes on there.
Yeah, I don't know what the other ones are there.
They might be Roman or Greek or Roman letters. Probably Roman letters if it was Romans. Anyway.
Yeah, maybe Roman.
But people in ancient Egypt were casting icosahedra even earlier. I thought it was a dodecahedron. Isn't that a 20-sided?
I thought that's what the D stood for. No.
Icosahedra. Look that up for me real quick. What is an icosahedra? Pictured above is the 20-faced die dating from somewhere between 304 and 30 BC. That's quite a range of about 200 years. The time span also known as Egypt's Ptolemaic period. I know it's not Ptolemaic, but I say knife too, so kill me now.
There you go. I'm sorry, go ahead.
According to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where the game piece is held, the die was once held in the collection of... one Reverend Chauncey Murch, who acquired it between 1883 and 1906 while conducting missionary work in Egypt.
Wait a minute. How did they document that?
What?
Was it in his journal?
Discovered this strange dice with... I don't know if it's legit. Do you know how many ancient artifacts are forged or faked?
I know it's a lot, isn't it?
But yeah, were they faking them... 100 years ago, 1883, more than 180 years ago. If you've got a 20-sided die that predates the Ptolemaic period, it's like pterodactyls. We want to know about it. Send us your email to technorama@chuckjat.com or your voicemail at 206-222-2428.
And by the way, an icosahedron is actually, it's a regular... polyhedron with 20 identical equilateral triangular faces, 30 edges, 12 vertices.
So what's a dodecahedron? Dodecahedron. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to win. In geometry, a dodecahedron is any polyhedron with 12. Oh! You learn something new on Technorama every week. I was off.
I'll edit the show so we sound like we know what we're talking about.
It has 20 vertices. That's what I was thinking. Oh, wait. A regular dodecahedron is meant a platonic solid. It is composed of 12 regular pentagonal faces. Not triangular.
I see. I gotcha. There you go. There's your difference.
With 3 meeting in each vertex and is represented by the Schlafly symbol 5-3. It has 20 vertices, 30 edges, and 160 diagonals. Whoa. Okay, so dodecahedron, 12 sides made of pentagons, an icosahedra. Wasn't she in a movie at some point?
Yeah.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah, that's right.
And not related to Arnold Schwarzenegger, but almost as cool... is Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, the scientist who demoted Pluto?
Yeah.
Wait, we need the music for the media corner.
We need to get him on.
Yeah, let's get him on the show.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
We could talk to him about his stint with Clark Kent.
Yeah. Forget Neil the rest of your career.
Neil deGrasse Tyson... is to appear in an upcoming issue of Superman. Huge props to DC Comics for this one. The company is releasing a new book this week, which is probably last week by the time you hear this, Action Comics Superman number 14, that addresses several heretofore unanswered questions about Krypton and the star it orbits. But here's the kicker. They consulted Neil deGrasse Tyson, the sexiest astrophysicist on Earth and director of NYC's Hayden Planetarium.
Are those your words or the articles?
This is the article's words.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Who was this written by? Robert T. Gonzalez. Okay, Robert, you're on my list. They had consulted him for an astronomical device. Yes, DC has elected to weave an actual star into Superman canon, and they put him in the comic. There is a panel, if you care to show that.
Oh, yeah, let me go back over there.
He's waltzing into the planetarium, or Superman is in the planetarium. Neil's rolling up his sleeves, and it says, "Thank you, USA." I think that's his assistant's name. It's not USA, right?
Yeah.
"But our guest is a busy man. Let him do what he came here to do." And Superman says, "Dr. Tyson, tonight of all nights, Superman, please call me Neil." Ah, can't wait to see the rest of the dialogue. Actually, Neil did more than just appear in the comic. He was approached by DC to find a good star to fit the story. Red supergiants don't work. They explode as supernovae when they are too young to have advanced civilization rise on any orbiting planet. Oh, ding, 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 ding. Wouldn't that hold true for Vulcan, too?
Maybe.
Red giants aren't a great fit, either. They can be old, but none is the right distance to match the storyline. It would have been a red dwarf. There are lots of them. They can be very old. And some are close enough to fit the plot. I won't keep you in suspense. The star is LHS 2520. Spoiler alert.
Well, they should go find it.
In the red dwarf in the southern constellation of Corvus, at the center of the picture here. We're here. There's Neil deGrasse Tyson in the picture.
Hey, you know what's funny is I started talking about this to Harrison, and he's like, "Oh yeah, red dwarf. That sounds like it makes sense." I was like, "What?" He said, "Because They're not as hot as the giant." I was like, he started talking about it like he knew about it. And I was like, it's amazing.
Every time I hear the name Corvus, I think of the first hard drive that I ever laid eyes on.
Corvus.
I was attached to a network of Apple IIs. It was a Corvus Systems. I think it was either 5 or 10 megabyte hard drive system. The size of the platters were like this.
You were right.
and I just happened to pull that out of thin air.
Yeah. Like this one. I got it in my pocket.
This is kind of scary what's in arm's reach.
You're like a cartoon character. Hey, look, I could pull a sledgehammer out of your pocket. Or an anvil.
One of those giant big hammers.
Yeah.
Boom. So, I would go out and buy this just because I think it's going to be collectible that Neil deGrasse Tyson's going to be in there. Who's next?
Stephen Hawking?
Yeah. That was too easy.
Yeah. Start getting Big Bang Theory characters in there.
All the other people on the universe show.
They start getting right. Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory.
No. No. He can bring his pillow.
Yeah.
All right, real quick. This past weekend, we had a rather unexpected technological assistance.
Really?
Walked into church for the 8 a.m. service.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys who originally got me involved with teaching Sunday school, neighbor here, he lives about 2 blocks away from me, Gary flags me down. He goes, "Hey, you want to run the camera?" I went, "Oh, what?"
Yeah.
In case you weren't paying attention, we're no longer on the media corner. We left that about 32 minutes ago. And I said, "What do you need?" He said his teenage student helper didn't show up.
Oh,
so Liam,
imagine that.
Liam, which... I spelled backwards as male, did not show up, and I got to run one of the cameras, and it was kind of cool. There's headsets with the microphone, so you can talk to Gary back in the control room. That used to be Julie's job. Remember when she used to do this show?
Yeah, I was going
to
say, did she have something to do with this?
She was in the control room back then, but I never ran the cameras. Well, now I ran the camera. It was kind of cool, because they've got two cameras, and he'd say, "Okay, I'm going upstairs," and he'd switch the upstairs balcony camera. And then I could pan and zoom and change whatever I wanted on the downstairs when he says, "Okay, cutting to downstairs." But The technology, the cameras are great, but the headsets are getting a little old.
Oh, really?
Because the boom microphone, if it's not in the right place, you're not talking. We were about 10, 15 minutes into the service, and he goes, I said, Gary, I got to go get a bulletin. Gary, are you there? He says, if you're trying to talk to me, you might have to jiggle the boom till you hear your own voice.
It's got a short in it or just a
very directional? It's got a short somewhere. Oh, okay. It's like, it's time to upgrade those babies.
Yeah, right.
They're actually working on a whole overhaul upgrade of the control room, get it more computerized so that it's digitized. And then we burn these to DVD, and then they go out to the community channel. So a week later, all the people who can't get to church, the shut-ins, the old people and the handicapped people, whatever, they can watch it on TV and they still get their service a week late.
So you're podcasting it?
Yeah, kind of in a way.
Yeah.
And then I had another technology church revelation today that we're practicing the Christmas songs for the kids. I mentioned Sunday school, still doing that, teaching third grade. And we have a Christmas pageant every year. Well, we just started practicing last week, and we've got to learn these songs. Well, there's about 7 songs on this thing, and 5 or 6 of which the kids don't know. So we have to learn these every year. And I told the nice volunteer lady who comes and helps us, I said, Tracy, if you can record it, I will burn CDs or put it online so kids can listen to this during the week. Because the more they listen, the better they'll learn, the faster they'll learn.
That's true.
Then when we can just practice real fast on Sunday, because we've only got 20 or 30 minutes a week to practice these things. And we only have like 3 weeks left.
Yeah.
Because there's no Sunday school on Thanksgiving weekend. And then it's boom, 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 show. Now, I'm amazed. The kids pull off an excellent job every year. So I'm just trying to think of ways to make things a little smoother and easier.
Yeah.
Let's use technology. You know, mom and dad can help click on the link on the website and play the song anytime you want. They could download it and put it on their phone and play it in the car, or I'll burn them a CD. I'll pony up $5 or $6 for, you know, a stack of CDs that I can burn and give to them if they want.
So, yeah, because you know, who uses those anymore?
If you're listening in the car, you might. You know, and you can give them directly to the kids, and that way, if they want to rip them and make them portable, they can. But if you just say it's online, not everybody's going to be able to go get it. And you know, asking the parents,
it's online. Okay.
Yeah, I guarantee you, most people will do this, but I want to make the most channels available to the
the
kids. Plus, if they have it in their hand, it's easier to say, "Mom, can I listen to this? You know, before bed or whatever." And it's going to be a funny program. There's one song in there called Shaggy Smelly Sheep. It's from the shepherd's perspective. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Cool. Had enough of that. Should we go on with the Geek Library?
Why don't you just give all the kids iPods with the one song on it?
I can't afford that. Sorry.
It's not in the budget.
Here's your free download. Have you ever wondered, now that you're tired of listening to this and you want to commit suicide, have you ever wondered why people stop committing suicide with gas?
No.
Remember in the old movies and things, people would stick their head in the oven?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Don't see that anymore, do you? Do you know why?
Why?
I read this article all the way through, so I'll give you a quick summary. The gas isn't the same as it used to be back then.
What?
Suicide by gas did not go out of style, it just became a whole lot less convenient. The gas piped into your house these days is not your grandfather's gas. Modern gas companies deliver, quote-unquote, natural gas, a naturally occurring fossil fuel that is a benign mixture of methane and ethane. It only smells terrible, because that's what we added to it. It's not really that lethal. Safety types call it a simple asphyxiant. Turn on your gas jets, and yes, you will die, but only after the gas displaces most of the oxygen, or more likely, reaches the pilot light and explodes.
Oh, so it's for safety reasons.
So who has that kind of patience?
Hmm.
And who can stand for that smell that long? You know, that rotten egg smell?
Yeah, right, yeah.
The gas it replaced, quote-unquote coal gas or illuminating gas, was another matter entirely. It was manufactured locally at gasworks from coal heated in airtight chambers. The gas it produced is a mixture of methane, hydrogen, and carbon monoxide. Not only burned beautifully, but was perfectly suited for the suicidally inclined. So the active ingredient was,
so this gas is up to OSHA standards or something now?
Right. The key ingredient back then was the carbon monoxide. So that's the difference. I didn't realize that till I read this. I went, hey, you know what? They're right. Why don't people stick their head in the ovens anymore? It takes too long.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Same carbon monoxide as you used to see people start up the old 52 Buick and fall asleep in the garage.
Why did they change that? Just for the safety reason?
I will tell you. Advances in metallurgy and welding technology in the 30s and 40s brought coal gas industry to an end. Natural gas, formed as a nuisance byproduct of oil drilling that was frequently simply burnt off at the wellhead, could now be transported long distances cheaply and easily. The almighty dollar has spoken once again. After World War II, American cities and towns rapidly switched over to the newer, safer gas, safety being a factor as well as the cheaper. The local gas plant joined the horse trams and coal furnaces on the dust heap of discarded technology. I probably would have said some other technology, but there you go.
Huh, pretty cool.
Now, the transition in Britain was actually a little slower. The gas works were in place in the 70s. Yeah, go back and watch some of the old Monty Pythons and stuff, and they'll talk about the gas works.
Yeah. And, I remember seeing the flame at the top of the wellheads like you were just talking about.
Oh, they still have those. That's some of it. That's not all of the, the ones that are offshores and out at seas, probably not that cheap to get the gas back to the land, which is why they're burning them out there on the offshore oil rigs. But the land-based ones, sure, capture it and sell it. There you have it, folks, in the Geek Library, why people don't stick their heads in the oven. And you know what else I wanted to know?
What's that?
How? Questions that boggle the minds. Yeah,
things
from
that
Technorama.
Make you go,
Last article we have here is, how did they pick those crappy movies on Mystery Science Theater 3000?
Yeah, where did they find those things?
I will tell you who did that.
Because there's some that I'm probably the majority of them, you go, I would have never just accidentally run across those, like the Swedish films. And
here is the really sad, sad part of it. And it kind of explains the man we saw. When you saw him, you go, oh, that's why he's that way.
Okay.
Frank Conniff. You know who Frank Conniff is?
Yeah.
He joined the show.
We met him at the podcast expo.
We did. 2007, I think it was. He joined the show as a writer late in the first season and joined the cast as TV's Frank.
I was going to say, what is TV's Frank?
Dr. Forrester's sidekick. Right. He was in the second season and was given the job to select these movies. During his tenure, which went through the sixth season, they made fun of movies like Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, one of my favorites, Teenagers from Outer Space, and the most memorably, Menos, The Hands of Fate.
Yeah.
He says, I think I was given the job because everybody else was busy with other stuff. No, you drew the short straw, Frank. The job was particularly difficult for everyone. For every one movie that made the show, he had to watch approximately 20 duds.
Oh my gosh.
And he couldn't skim them either.
I know. That's what we're just talking about. After I edit our show, I have to proof it. I'm like,
well, no, for this, listen to this. During the second season of MST3K, they got the rights to a film that he had only skimmed part of. When they sat down to write the show, they discovered that there was a very violent rape scene towards the end.
Oh.
The movie Side Hackers stayed in, and the cast just had to explain to the audience why the female lead suddenly disappeared.
That's terrible. Oh, man.
So over the years, he watched a few thousand bad movies. That's a lot of terrible acting.
Yeah.
And Splitsider, Vigiant further explains the qualities that make for an ideal MST3K film. We'll have a link in the show notes. That's frightening.
What, watching all those many bad movies?
Yes.
Yeah. That is terrible. Remember, I remember watching one, and I don't remember the name of it. Maybe you can tell me. It's the one where it was a Swedish film or something like that. It's, they're in the woods. And there's like this.
Is that the one with the Sampo? What's a Sampo?
Yeah, it's like little elf guy.
Oh no, I'm thinking of the one with the
elf guy, and he's on top of some huge mushrooms, and the guy's trying to catch him.
I don't know.
He's like,
remember Mr. B Natural?
Huh?
Mr. Be Natural?
I have no idea. Kind of
his Peter Panish character taught about music. It was one of the film shorts at the beginning. Mr. B, you're hot. It was a woman dressed up in a leotard. Kind of like Mary Martin played Peter Pan. How's that for a quick trivia fact you didn't think was coming your way?
Yeah, no kidding.
And with that left turn, you didn't think I knew the old Peter Pan, did you?
No.
Ha ha. You thought you just knew the Robin Williams one. I mean, Hook. Da, da, da. Well, that takes us to the end of the show. Believe it or not, it's been a full 50-some-odd minutes. By the time you edit, it'll probably be down about 48. I know you and your crafty cut and paste.
I'll make it down to 20.
We appreciate giving us your... Please, spare the listener.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they don't stick around anymore. We appreciate your support if you have stuck around. If you like the show, you can give us a call in the listener line, 206-222-2428. Or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Go to the website, find all the contact info. We've got that Facebook page thing, and we're starting to stick more and more stuff in there every day. We'd love to see you hanging out there and like us on Facebook and Google Plus and all that other good stuff. Special thanks to Mad Marv for the great blog content during the week. He had a good one up there just a few days ago. I'm trying to remember what it was, and I'll have to go back and look. Actually, you know what? I'll bet it's still there.
Chuckchat.com.
So what's the URL again?
What, for our website?
Yes.
Chuckchat.com/technorama.
There's the interview with Ernest Cline. Oh, the Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome. We should have talked about that. Very good stuff.
Yes,
go
I
check
did
it
post
out
that.
If you haven't seen it.
Yeah, episode 1 and 2
he
is
did
available.
Post that.
Check it out.
I like it. Thanks for the people in the chat room and you for downloading and listening. Until next time. Go download the show, tell a friend about Technorama, and give me a binary high five.
101! Woo! Can I stop this now?
Yes, you must stop now.